From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. This Friday, two big items in the news here in the United States were the Skripal case, the poisoning case in the UK, and what appears to be a burgeoning trade war between the US and China. For more on that, we spoke with international affairs analyst Mark Sloboda, who's a senior lecturer at Moscow State University, via Skype from Moscow on Friday. Okay, Mark, well, let's see. We've got the Skripal case. We've got Trump and Xi thumping on each other's chests about various tariffs and things and a whole lot more. So let's just dive in.
Well, thanks for having me, Don. It's always good to be on CPR. Always an honor and a pleasure.
Our pleasure to have you.
I think probably the latest news out of this Sergei Skripal political theater that's being waged. First, the news out today was that Sergei Skripal is no longer in critical condition.
So that's some fatal chemical weapon. Huh? It didn't kill either one of them.
Three of them.
Oh, right, that's right.
Because there was the policeman. He's already out walking along the streets for a couple months now, a couple weeks now. The daughter miraculously recovered just over a week ago.
Yeah, she did an interview yesterday or something.
Yeah, she did a phone. Yeah, she called her relatives in Russia. And she says she's fine and her father is fine and sleeping. That there was no irreversible harm done. And that they expect to be released soon. And Sergei Skripal, it was announced today that he is no longer in critical condition. He's recovering, in what must be presumed a stable condition. Now, this is a miraculous Easter miracle. We must assume that this is evidence of the second coming of Jesus Christ, because we've been told for some 6 weeks now that this is a military grade secret Soviet nerve agent, 10 times more powerful than VX. We've been told that it would leave them brain dead, that if they weren't dead yet, their lungs and heart, their entire nervous system would be destroyed, and their lungs and heart wouldn't work on their own, and that if they took them off the machines, they would die, and they would be brain dead regardless. And in fact, it's rather amusing that in the last week, The Telegraph ran a story with a headline along the lines that the Skripals should be allowed to die, friends say. And then the very next day, 36 hours later, they ran a headline that the daughter, Yulia Skripal, is okay. She's out of critical condition and she's talking and responsive and everything. So, I don't know what else to tell you. This is probably enough to make me convert.
Well, it is Orthodox Easter coming up Sunday,
And you guys had Easter last week.
That's right. Yep, they did. Yep.
So, on top of that, the latest news out as this is going on is that the U.S. State Department has leveled new sanctions against Russia, or at least against a handful of Russian businessmen, oligarchs, and Russian companies. And the statement from the State Department was that this was not directly related to the Skripal scenario, the narrative which is falling apart minute by minute, is concerning Russia's malign activities around the world for the last few years, which basically I translate as these bad boys have been resisting our regime change Syria and Ukraine.
These elites will no longer be insulated from consequences of Russia's destabilizing activities. Now, how do you call what Russia is doing in Syria destabilizing from the White House?
They're literally destabilizing Al Qaeda and Harar.
Right. But you have the U.S. and its allies throwing all these terrorists into Syria to destabilize and then destroy the country. The government invites Russia in to stabilize the country and protect it from these destabilizing elements, and yet Russia's destabilizing.
As Josh Rogan said in the pages of the Washington Post last week in a headline, we took the oil. And then he finished it with the line, "We took the oil, now we have to keep it."
Nice. At least they're honest.
That's what I find refreshing about Josh Rogan is, for a neocon imperialist, he's one of the more honest and forthright ones. He doesn't need to cloak everything behind democratizing rhetoric and so on. So,
well, you got Heather Nauert yesterday, by the way, when looking at the Department of State. The United States calls on, of all people, Vietnam to release all prisoners of conscience immediately and to allow all individuals in Vietnam to express their views freely and assemble peacefully without fear of retribution. Or does that mean also without fear of a B-52 attack or a, what was that stuff, that the Agent Orange attack? How does the United States dare to talk about what goes on inside Vietnam at this point?
Well, I mean, Heather Nauert last week, I mean, she is directly quoted as saying, this is the U.S. State Department spokeswoman, that Russia has many arms and many tentacles. It is a deep sea
yep, she
beast,
did. Yep,
quote,
she said
unquote.
She said
I had no idea that Heather Nauert was a Cthulhu fan, was an H.P. Lovecraft fan.
Yeah, right.
And so I only have one thing to say to Heather. Mm. Fanaglui Mlugui Na Cthulhu Ryla Waga Naga Fatagin.
Which means?
In his house at Ryla, dead Cthulhu waits dreaming.
What is that from? Is that from
H.P. Lovecraft.
Oh, same thing. There you go.
Yeah, okay. Cthulhu, the tentacles. The tentacles.
There you go.
The
so I was thinking more like it was like a fried galamad or something that they had in mind.
I mean, you can go back to the Russian Empire. Of which there were numerous iterations. The early days of the Soviet Union, Goebbels' propaganda against the Soviet Union during World War II, all through the Cold War, and this thing with octopus and tentacles. This refrain has been repeated all the way up to the most modern.
Yep.
In the last couple of weeks, The Economist picturing Putin as the meddler, as a octopus with Putin's face, and now Heather Nauert's Cthulian tentacles. You know, I mean, it's amazing. A couple weeks ago, The Guardian literally just copied a many-armed tentacle, a piece of literal Goebbels propaganda, and just updated for the first day. You can find it online. It's
like that now, though. It really is like that.
It is amazing how crude it is, though. In a way, like how little innovation there is to it when you've been looking at when you've been dealt with the same type of propaganda for the last 150 years. I guess the whole thing behind it is showing is Russia's influence and meddling throughout the world. I mean, and this is coming from the U.S. and U.K. Are you serious?
Yeah, right. I know. Please.
Them calling someone else meddling? I'm
wondering, meanwhile, is Heather Nauert reaching anything the popularity of our dear friend from the Obama administration?
Oh. Psaki?
Yeah, Jen Psaki.
Psaki, yeah. Now, Jen Psaki has legendary status here. The Russian people, I mean, she was a piece of the nighttime, late night TV shows.
Right.
She was a regular.
Right.
Her skits. You know, she was the Russians' favorite comedy routine out of the United States, and Heather Nauert is definitely she's showing her some oomph. She's putting it all out there, but she's got a long way to go to fill Psaki's shoes.
Yep. That's well, she's working on it though. She's working pretty hard.
She's working. Give her credit. I think she's got potential.
All right. So meanwhile, the real thing, the real story here, and watching the international markets rebound over the, you know, back and forth over the last few days, what the media portrays as a trade war with China, the U.S. and China, but in other words, then they're personalizing it, of course, between Trump and Xi. Who knows what's going on in the back rooms, because there are certainly some actual adjustments that have to be made, and some of those in the face of some well-established constituencies in both places. So there's got to be kind of a, you know, an apparent game and then the actual game. But you have Trump imposing tariffs on steel and aluminum, I think, initially, and China standing up to that. The market's going haywire, thinking there's a trade war in the offing. Then they stabilize, then another chest-thumping session, and another just today. So maybe you want to work some of that.
Sure. First of all, I do find it rather interesting. Almost as one, the Western media, popular, you know, powerful figures in Washington, even the American Chamber of Commerce has been almost universal in condemning this trade war on China by Trump, which is all rather fascinating,
right?
Because, well, we are one thin straw away from an actual hot war with nuclear-armed Russia.
Right.
God forbid that we have a trade war that interferes with business.
That's
because
right.
That's another story. Well, the way Trump tells it, and you know, and he does tell it right on Twitter and elsewhere, that the U.S. He says the U.S. is not at a trade war with Russia, because which is ridiculous, because obviously there are. He's just escalating it because the U.S. lost a trade war with China due to the foolish and incompetent policies for the last couple decades.
Right.
And he's actually got a point there.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, it goes a little bit further back. It goes all the way back to Bretton Woods and the creation of
right.
the neoliberal capitalist system,
right.
the embrace of China during the Cold War, and the flowing of Western capital into China for cheap production value.
Yep.
It is an inevitable and predictable result of the process.
Yep, I know.
what they hoped is that in the midst of all of this, that the Chinese Communist government, which is economically communist and really in name only, would collapse throughout this process, and
yeah.
they haven't. In fact,
no.
they've managed. They studied how the Soviet Union collapsed, and they've kept control rather well.
Right.
Now, certainly, with a large amount of social benefits that has to be recognized. Certainly, that Americans last, but also with a great deal of political and societal control,
right.
and themselves at the head of it. So, these numbers are contested. But the official figures is the U.S. has a $500 billion trade deficit with China. And this is, longstanding.
Right. Which is about $1,500, $1,300 for every man, woman, and child in
right.
the United States. I mean, it's a chunk of change for sure.
Yeah. And that comes on top of a $21 billion U.S. just federal deficit.
Right.
Of which the largest foreign holder of that debt
is China,
to a tune of almost $2 trillion in total, is China.
Right.
So, picking a trade war with your primary foreign debtor,
right.
not the smartest thing. Not the smartest thing in the world.
It's like going down the street to the bank to see the president of the bank that holds a mortgage on your house, punching him in the face, and then defaulting on your loan.
So now this $500 billion, there are people who are trying to contest it, who say, well, it doesn't include services, which the U.S. does a good business with services with China. Of course, they are already
right.
doing the same back, and that it doesn't account for parts that are actually high tech parts, chips and stuff that are actually come from some other countries, Japan and South Korea, and then are just assembled in China, a lot of the end result profit does end up in China regardless.
Right.
Everyone knows there's a trade deficit.
Right.
The U.S. doesn't make anything anymore. Everything's made in China or Indonesia or somewhere. And Trump won election in no small part due to speaking to those who have been disenfranchised from this neoliberal capitalist globalization.
Right.
And when the economists and, you know, and the supporters of it say that, you know, oh, GDP has gone up, living, you know, whether they cherry pick a bunch of other numbers, you know, and it's true. It's all true, right?
Yep.
Aggregate wealth has increased. It's gone to the hands of a few, but there's no question that aggregate wealth has GDP has gone up as a result of globalization, not just in the U.S., but in many other countries, China in particular as well.
Yep.
But what they never will admit to is that there have been those, and there is no small number of them, that have lost from globalization.
The majority in the United States. I mean, they poll that something like 65% of the population does not have $1,000 liquid.
Yeah, there's no question that living standards have gone down in the U.S., that the middle class is shrinking, and that particularly these blue-collar working-class jobs across the Mid-Atlantic and the Rust Belt were lost.
Right.
Now, the proponents of this globalization and free trade, you know, Clinton, you know, having been married to Bill Clinton, who was one of the biggest ones who saw this come to its peak, you know, she can't really admit to any of this, Trump spoke to these people, and he spoke to their pain and suffering, and he said he would bring this fight to Washington. Now, of course, he can't do anything to change this. This is a genie or an efreet, a demon, however you want to look at it, that's been let out of the bottle.
Right.
And there's really no easy way to see how any of this can be clawed back, bar gigantic civilization collapsing, civil wars, and so on. You know, the elite, the 1% that have been enriched throughout all of this, are not exactly going to give up the process that has made them so wealthy, and so on.
Yeah, you have to take their capital against their will, more or less, either in title or at least in operation, and apply it to constructing new factories and all. You have to build a new economy from the ground up with money that belongs to somebody else.
A new global economy, because it has to be remembered. Right.
Right. Where am I going to sell the cars?
Americans maintain what living standard they do due to the import of cheap Chinese and other Asian goods.
That's right.
Right. At extremely low prices.
Right.
That, you know, help maintain the illusion of prosperity on a global, relative comparison. And China needs the U.S. to continue purchasing to maintain its domestic growth, its employment, and so on. And other countries need China producing, like Russia, which is a huge supplier of energy and raw materials to China, as many other countries are, Iran and lots of Africa and so on. So we're all connected, for better or worse, these days, right? And this trade war is going to have reverberations, not just in the United States and not just in China, throughout the whole world. But Trump promised these American working class, you know, and I'm looking specifically at you, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Washington, that he would take
Ohio,
the fight for. I think in their heart of hearts, a lot of these people understand at some level that Trump is not going to be able to do anything to really improve their lives. You know, the type of working class jobs that they had are gone. They're never going to return to the United States. And you know, Trump browbeating one company after another individually makes for great television, but it's not going to make jobs in any meaningful way to return to the United States. Same thing with this trade war here.
Right.
This is not actually a trade war with China. Yeah, sure, the U.S. has grievances with China. They say currency manipulator. They talk about dumping on the U.S. and other, you know, markets and everything. But, you know, they know that these tariffs being placed on Chinese good up to $50 billion. So now, just in the latest round, they're now talking. Trump is tweeting madly about another $100 billion or so. They know that this isn't going to shrink that trade deficit, to do that, Americans would have to stop buying cheap Chinese goods, and that's not going to happen. But this is all domestic political theater, and the Chinese are just guest actors in this. The real target is the midterm elections in 2018.
Yeah.
And Trump needs to bring to the people that helped, you know, put him over the top in these states and in other states, he needs to show them that he's fighting for them. And this is his way of doing that. And it has to be noted, first of all, that these tariffs don't come into effect immediately. First of all, they've got a 2-month period for consultations. And then he's got another 6 months on top of that to implement them. So amazingly, that brings us right up to the midterm elections.
Yeah, isn't that a coincidence? Yeah.
Isn't that a coincidence? So China knows this. So I think what Trump wants is this political theater to show the people of the U.S. that he's fighting for them, you know, and again, particularly these economically disenfranchised working class that are now shrinking from the middle class down into the lower class. And in some way, you know, you can commiserate with him, at least in the fact that he's the only one who really spoke to their pain. It long ago became anathema in the Democratic Party to speak to the working poor.
Except for Sanders did too, which explains exactly, you know, his phenomenology.
It was rigged against him.
So. But that was, he was supposed to be like a little blip that was, you know, going to be a straw person or a coat for her to wear, and instead, you know, many say he actually beat her, but he rode that same sentiment and spoke to those same issues.
Sure, and he was slurred as a populist and a Russian puppet, and that, you know, everything, a Kremlin agent, as a result of that.
Yep.
So the Chinese have got to understand. I think they're smart enough to understand what's going on at this point, because if you take a look at their counter sanctions, and they of course immediately put a tariff on $50 billion of U.S. goods, it's focused heavily on agriculture. Particularly looking at soybeans, wheat, and other things.
Right.
Also at beef, whiskey, cigars, and if you take a look,
the states,
awful lot. Yeah, exactly.
It's an electoral map.
Yeah. Products. Are red state products.
Yep.
And I think they're sending a signal to Trump saying, you know, in the way they do, because, you know, the Chinese can't compete with the Trump political theater via Twitter and, you know, him playing, you know, the liberal media in the U.S. like a fiddle, which he does so well. The Chinese, you know, don't do that. They take the phrase diplomatic understatement to a ridiculous level. But I think they're sending a signal in the way they can to Trump that they know that this is not actually about economics, that this is actually about domestic politics in the U.S. Yeah. And by targeting these particular products in these states, which are, you know, you don't think of soybeans. Soybeans are actually a really important U.S. export. They're really important for the basis of a lot of other agriculture, for feedstocks and you know, tofu or other things. They're actually a fairly important product, and again, hitting these signature items: whiskey, cigars, you know, prime beef. You know, this is red state stuff.
Right.
This is red state stuff.
No, this is a surgical. You know, this is a political surgical. You know, response that from China.
Yeah, it is
saying,
really, and it's really interesting because the U.S.'s tariffs go all across the board to your uranium and some tech and cars and whereas on the other hand the Chinese sanctions are really laser focused. The U.S. sanctioned some 1,300 U.S. goods, I believe, something like that, or Chinese goods.
Right.
They put tariffs on them, and the Chinese sanctions back target 106. U.S. exports.
Now, see,
I'm
going to suggest also. I mean, this is something when we were doing the, you know, post-election review back in 2016 that I had noted. You know, having followed Trump's development career, that their ground game dealt with micro constituencies. You know, like in laser precision, they, you know, would map a community. They knew who everybody was, what everybody wanted, what they had to say to get their projects approved. And even though they were way out
of
scale,
Cambridge Analytica.
Okay, but even
and
before
Facebook,
that,
and
but even before that, and that's how they roll. And so what China's doing is saying, not only do we know your game, you know, we can play it. You can say all that stuff if you want. If it starts to get real, we know exactly where to take you out. It's like they're mapping his groin right before they kick, you know. And It's an interesting. Let me just ask you, because we got about 5 minutes left. But this is the apparent game. This is what I was referring to earlier. You have Trump is playing to his political constituencies for the midterms, and also to solidify his position. You know, because he's still under constant attack from all over the place here. China has that issue, and also to assert itself in the real world as a response. The actual global economy, in a way, you know, the way that the U.S. Subsidizes the working class with cheap Chinese labor here is essentially a variant of the old imperialist model. They used to do this on, you know, cheap materials and labor from third world colonies. And now there's this whole weird hybrid that was constructed over the last 30 years, while it also enabled China to rapidly develop itself. And China's relationship is like a classic capitalist model. They look at the United States as a big market that they have to keep and add to. How are they going to... there's some kind of an, I don't know if it's epical, but some kind of sea change in international relations keeps trying to, you know, present itself on the stage. We had this, you know, head-on resistance by the hegemonic characters during the Obama administration. I think Clinton represented that. Do you think that there's like a new deal trying to be negotiated in the back room, and that this bluster might be cover for it?
Yeah, I don't see any, certainly no deal between the U.S. and China or anything. I mean, I think it's nothing being done between these two sides. But there definitely is a multipolar world emerging, and the U.S. is still doing its best to cling on to the power and the levers that they have. China knows this. They know that they and the rest of the world economy depends on this fiction of U.S. consumption, on massive debt and so on. They're playing the game. And one of the things that has been noted in this whole thing is that Chinese domestic consumption is increasing, right?
Yeah,
they've elevated the wealth of their own people to a significant degree where they're able to buy their own products in other countries. And this is a measure of defense against, U.S. tariffs. They can absorb some of that. They're not as vulnerable as they were 10 years ago, and they're becoming less so. One of the big things that China can play is they've slowly been reducing the amount of U.S. debt, U.S. dollars that they buy, and they could start selling them off. And that's going to happen eventually. China's right. Not ready yet. They will be. Russia's doing the same thing, heavily investing in gold, which the Chinese have also been doing for their reserves,
right.
And there have been the basic architecture built to trade in each other's currency for things
Petro
like
one.
Oil and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah,
to fight the petrodollar. All right, this is all slow. This is well planned. It's being done in closed doors, but not between right. Washington and Beijing, but between
right.
Beijing and Moscow. I mean, the Chinese defense minister was just in Moscow this week for a security conference.
Yeah, sure.
And he said specifically, and I quote, "We're here to show the Americans how close the
right.
Russian and Chinese militaries are."
That's right.
That's a big statement. That
was huge.
That's as close as the Chinese, again, will ever come to saying, "We have our own Article 5, buddies."
Yeah. I mean, it was almost an epical event when they declared, it was three years ago, that there was a strategic partnership. And now that statement, was essentially, look, you hit Article 5. You hit my friend over here, I hit you.
It does not. The multipolar world is returning, right? It is inevitable. We're in a great game now, not a cold war.
Right.
It is a result of many things. It's a return of history when these big populist countries like China and India were once big players in the world stage, reduced because of Western imperialism and colonialism. They're back. Russia, they're back with a vengeance. It does not have to be. The emergence of a multipolar world does not have to be conflict, but those
That's
who
right.
have cannot give up to the money and power that they have willingly, even if the majority of it's being done by the system that they themselves, the
right.
economic system, starting Bretton Woods all the way through, that they created.
We got to stop here, Mark. Thank you very much, and appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Don.
Yep. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.